Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
It can get lonely climbing Mount McKinley, so to entertain myself, I go to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, I can play hundreds of online casino-style games for free, like online slots, bingo, slingo, and more. Plus, I get a daily login bonus. It's just too bad that up here, I don't have anyone to share my excitement with. Woohoo! Woo-hoo!
Live the Chumba life anytime, anywhere. Play for free now at ChumbaCasino.com. VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Oh, what are you doing? I'll tell you what you're doing. You're listening to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Either you are, or I'll be skipping rope with your entrails. Ta-ta.
This is the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Your source for lore and so much more. Adventurers, welcome back to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. This is Tom. I'm here with Lotus. You guys know the deal, but hey, we decided that it has been enough time. This is something we've done in the past. It gets to about December. A number of months have gone by since the release of the most recent update for Elder Scrolls Online. And by that mean, I mean like the next story content thing.
Yeah, so, the full chapter completion, so to speak.
Right, right. So we decided, you know what? We've given people time. If they want to play through stuff, they can play through stuff. But we want to discuss the big thing that was the hot news about, what, 6 months ago or whenever that was.
Yeah. Well, something we should probably preface too here. Like, this isn't overtly spoiling the story because Tom and I were joking before the show. Neither of us actually have 100%ed the story.
We're both at
varying points.
I'm down to like the very last quest that I just need to like do the very last little bit. But I've done almost all of it. Yeah.
And I'm still in like the rising action, so to speak.
Lotus is lagging behind. But that doesn't mean that we can't talk about Aethelia because so much of that stuff has already been spoiled online. If you've even played
including
through, like,
the reveal.
Yeah.
Like, it was last year's big twist. And then for this year's reveal of Gold Road, they basically were like, by the way, there's another Daedric Prince. So
right.
The cat was officially out of the bag. So that is, we're not going to consider that a spoiler. We're just not going to spoil the Gold Road story, if that makes sense.
Yes. Things happen. You meet certain people. You go on some quests. Other things happen that may or may not be a surprise to you. And then there's some sort of culmination and of. I think like everyone knew that somehow the story would have to get put back together in a way that the games later on wouldn't or would still be able to be possible because it's a prequel series.
Does like need to go back to being hyper obscure.
Right. So none of that
can't
stuff
know about that.
Right. None of that stuff is a surprise. Everybody kind of has a sense of where that's going. And in doing some research for this episode, did go back through and noticed a bunch of people's comments on forums and Reddit about how some people were just kind of about the story because of that. It's the problem with prequels. It's just kind of the nature of prequels. Right.
You are kind of boxed in to what comes after.
Right.
Or you get in these weird situations where it's like, yeah, here's a thing that happened, but due to extraneous circumstances, there's a reason that it's also forgotten. It's kind of with dragons where like implied that they weren't around, but then they sort of are.
Right.
So it's kind of retconned in, but they weren't totally gone. They were just less prevalent than it implies in ESO. So it's another one of those things, like you said, with prequels.
Right. But here's what I want to do. I want to talk about Aethelia because there are some things about her that people weren't talking about. People did not expect. There are ties into the deeper lore of Elder Scrolls that I think a lot of people, when they heard, forgotten Daedric Prince, a lot of people went, wait a minute, how's that possible? Aren't there only so many of them? And they started having these legitimate concerns about how that fits into the lore and the world and all of that. But I think now that we are past all of this and have gotten more details about who Aethelia really is, that there's actually more going on here. And on top of that, I think, and this is something I think Lotus agrees with me on, our perspective of what actually makes a Daedric Prince, has continued to shift over time in the series and has moved on. So And maybe we should start there. Like, initially, yeah. I think a lot of people went with the whole Ouroboros, isn't it? The wheel, the wheel and the spokes thing, right?
Yes, this idea, the spoke and the wheel analogy that has been in the series for quite a while.
Right.
But as more games come out, it continues to be a little less relevant. And
yeah. Yeah, and I think there's good reason for that. Like, we have unreliable narrators, we have multiple yep. forms of religion, we have multiple ways in which these cosmic beings have revealed themselves to different cultures over different time periods. There's a lot of reasons why the different groups would have come up with ways of explaining the things that they've engaged with that might not always line up with the way that other cultures have engaged with these cosmic beings. And one of them is this idea of, like, the spoke and the wheels, right? So, you not wheels, plural, but the wheel, and then yep. you have the spokes, and then you have in between the spokes, and the Daedric princes are supposed to fill only so many of these slots. But that's not actually true. That what that does is it implies that the cosmic beings have kind of a static nature, that there are right. only so many Aedra and there are only so many Daedric princes, and every slot must be filled. And that means that there isn't any opportunity for those slots to be removed or anything else to be added in. But that doesn't seem to be the case. We have Hersine, who was added to the lore at one point. We have right. the dilemma with Hermaeus, or not Hermaeus, more with Sheogorath and the nature.
Yeah, I was about to say that the whole Jigalag. Situation with Sheogorath being a previous Daedric prince of Jigalag, but then with the Greymarch Jigalag returning, does that mean there's temporarily an extra Daedric prince, but then it goes away? It becomes really like, okay, yeah, this is very fluid along with everything else in Oblivion, it seems like.
Yeah, yeah. And then Boethia, like, Boethia wasn't always Boethia, so that there's a right. thing going on there, right?
Yeah,
Trinimac.
Trinimac.
Right. So, like, there are a number of these things that happen that kind of make us reevaluate who the Daedric princes are. And I think that there are some things that Daedric princes have in common with each other. They are extremely powerful cosmic forces. They were not Aedra. They did not contribute to the building of Nirn in the way that the Aedra did. I think there's a few other things too. They seem to not be able to change themselves. They, in their aspects, are eternal and will always be roughly the same. They cannot change like mortals can. They also have a dominion within Oblivion that is basically part of themselves. So when you go visit, you know, a specific Daedric prince's domain in Oblivion, you're actually entering into that Daedric prince. That's why they have 100% control of the things that happen in their own dominions.
Yeah.
It's because that's who they are.
It takes a lot of effort to ever get into a plane of Oblivion where they don't know that you're there. It's usually right. the influence of another Daedric prince kind of doing something sketchy to get a workaround. And it's like, well, we've got this little blind spot we're utilizing
right.
type of deal. It's like, you know, with the main story of Elder Scrolls Online, you have Meridia pretending to be somebody else, basically. And that's how she establishes a foothold in Cold Harbor.
Right, right. Yeah, and they have to almost be invited in by the other Daedric princes or use yes. very nefarious, yeah. powerful means with which in order to invade each other. But even right. when they do that, they're at a huge, huge disadvantage compared to the Daedric prince who owns that domain, who is that domain.
Exactly.
So, yeah, so that's kind of how that stuff works as well. But what that means is that there isn't necessarily a specific number of them. That number can change. It also means that the origins of those Daedric princes it doesn't have to come from the same spot. It seems as if some of the Daedric princes were created later. Some of them are primordial beings that kind of go well beyond the beginning of time, even. Some right. of them seem to be more associated with Sithis, but this is another one of those old concepts of them all being more Sithis-like and less Anu-like. You know, this yes, idea of like Aedra versus Daedra, Anu versus Sithis.
Right. And if you look into some of the scenarios that we've seen in the past and on forums and stuff like that from actual writers, Michael Kirkbride will throw him out because he's, yeah. you know, influential in so much of the writing around the time of Morrowind and stuff like that. You'll see some of these situations. You had made a reference to Hersine kind of like becoming a Daedric prince, whereas like in Battlespire, Dagon and Hircine sort of were kind of the same thing.
Right, right.
But not really. And then it became like two distinct entities, which I think was way better.
And that's like a meta choice. That's a meta distinction. That's like they didn't quite flesh out the lore yet sort of thing. So it doesn't mean that that actually happened in the lore.
Exactly. But it's just simply that it's a thing now.
Right.
There's the one of my favorite things about my favorite Daedric Prince, Hermaeus Mora, is the fact that it was referenced that Hermaeus Mora is actually the scraps of knowledge from previous Kalpas.
Right, yes.
Which is just like, okay, it's literally just like a pile of leftover info as the world recreates itself.
Right, but like Kalpas plays into this also, because the concept of Kalpas is fairly established in the lore as a possibility for the way time plays out. This idea that time is on a path, but each version of Nirn, each version of existence kind of has a beginning, a middle, and an end, and then reemerges, and time plays through again in a slightly different way. And there are ways for that information to kind of jump from one Kalpa to the next. In fact, there are beings like Hermaeus Mora who may be the result of the previous Kalpa, then move into the next Kalpa, and then somehow move into the next after that. But some beings don't necessarily make that jump. So there's
or they
complexity.
Get modified through it.
Right, or they get modified through it.
Because I was going to say, they're just on, you know, to support what you're saying there, one of the big things is like the Dreg Kings and they're tied to Molag Bal.
Yeah.
Very different scenario to what we generally deal with Molag Bal.
Yeah, yeah. So there's complexity around this. And on top of that, you have unreliable narrators and you have different people who want things to be more of a certain way than others. And so they push a certain agenda with a certain belief system that may be contrary to what actually happened. And on top of all of that, we can't go back to the Merithic era or before that and see the actual origins of everything because we just don't have the ability to see that. So how does this all relate to Athelia? Well, Athelia, we were told, was a Daedric prince that originally existed early, probably sometime from the beginning of time through the Merithic era. And then sometime in the Merithic era, the story is that Hermaeus Mora realized, because Hermaeus Mora collects all this knowledge, that this Daedric prince of paths, of potential, of potentiality, was going to become a threat to the existence of reality at some point. So he petitions the other Daedric princes, and some of them are not on board, but some of them are. And so they work together, and you'll get all the details specifically around this stuff in the questline stuff. So we're not going to spoil too much of this stuff.
Yeah, we're not getting too deep into that. That's
right.
The benefits of playing through the story specifically.
Right. And there's some cool stuff. You get, you know, like I'll just leave it there. There are cool stuff about some of the other Daedric princes, but the main concept here is that Hermaeus Mora and some other Daedric princes team up, and they basically lock her away. And there's a reason why this makes sense. And it doesn't have to do with the fact that she's simply a Daedric prince. In fact, when you think about what her power is, this idea that, and in here, we'll reference the UESP. She's known as the Prince of Paths, the Mistress of the Untraveled Road, the Unseen, the Fate Changer, the Dark Reflection, the Last Tomorrow, and She Who Saw and Wept. She seems to have kind of an overlap in her abilities of how she handles the movement of time. Whereas, and I think this is the big conflict that is actually more interesting than here, because a lot of people draw these connections between her and Hermaeus Mora. They're like, well, Hermaeus Mora can see all of this knowledge, all of this hidden knowledge, but he has very little ability to manipulate how the future goes. That's why he reaches out to other individuals.
He uses his knowledge to basically influence other things to do what he wants.
Right.
But he can't really just reach out and be like, I'm just going to run amok and do whatever I want.
Right. And Athelia, similarly, doesn't necessarily know everything, but can influence the flow of time. Who else does that sound like? When we talk about time, that means we're talking about Akatosh.
Right.
And there, I think, is actually the main conflict. A lot of people have put forward this idea that Hermaeus Mora was jealous of her abilities because he didn't have those abilities, even though he had this knowledge, and that may play into it. But I think that the more interesting dilemma here is that Athelia and Akatosh are at odds and have been since the beginning. And there's some proof for this. Here, let's get into this, because I think this is actually the really, really cool stuff that nobody talks about, or at least not hasn't really talked about very much, because it's
not
very
been the
odd.
Focus the same way that Hermaeus Mora. I mean, because to the general consensus, Hermaeus Mora, I've always joked, and like whenever we have like anything about like, oh, which is your favorite, I'm always like, Hermaeus Mora is like low-key way more over the top powerful than people seem to like imply, because you'll think of like, oh, Dagon, he's just wrecking everything. But Hermaeus Mora is much more subtle with kind of doing whatever he wants. Hermaeus Mora seems to take anybody as a threat against him as a means to eliminate. So I do get that.
Yeah, sure.
Like, okay, right, we're gonna we don't want anybody getting too close to being able to do something that could cause me an issue. So that's definitely true.
Yes.
But this is also like, I feel like it took center stage over this other side thing. Like, I feel like there's two prongs to this story.
Right. So, okay. So here, let me dive into this, because in order to get into this, we have to think back to what we know about the origins of existence and everything and time and the way magic works, all of this stuff. Magnus, we have to talk about Magnus. Remember Magnus? He helped with the creation of the world, but then he noped out. Remember this? And he leaves
right
a
right
hole
through the sky,
right through the sky.
Leaving holes.
Right, leaving a hole. That's where the sun is. And then the Magnagi were Magnus's, well, children or followers or whatever you want to call them. Yeah. And a bunch of them noped out as well and created all the stars. And so that's how that works. We've talked about this on previous episodes. But there's more complexity here, because there are at least 9 individuals who are Magnagi who did not follow Magnus back through to Aetherius. They stayed. And in the early ages of the world, during, you know, the Merithic era, and maybe even a little bit later on than that, depending on which ones, they actually influenced the way things work. One of them is Meridia.
Mm-hmm.
Meridia is interesting because she's a Daedric prince. But remember, in the intro, I was talking about how Daedric princes don't necessarily all come from the same place. They're just these kind of powerful cosmic beings. Well, Meridia was known as Merid Nunda. And this all comes from, and we'll probably have to dig in, maybe we should do this on the next week and get into the 9 Coruscations. And these are the Magnagi who stuck behind. It gets super weird. And we have one document. This is by the Star Queen Viralius. And it is a list of the star orphans. That's what these are called, because they were children of Magnus who were left behind. One of them, we're not going to get into all 9 of them because we don't have time from this episode to talk about it. But Meridia is interesting because she's Merid Nunda. And there are all sorts of gaps in the text. So I'm going to note those gaps as I read through this. But here's what we know about Merid Nunda. Merid Nunda is the red star. That's her realm of oblivion, which in the sky looks like a red star. Harbinger of Dawn, second daughter of, and then it skips, probably Magnus. She is the light of blank, who bore witness to the crucible of creation. And then another gap, refraction within reason, goddess who holds, another gap, free will is to be surrendered to passion. Destiny is fulfilled for the vessel, radiant in times of, and then a blank, blinding the dragon and bending his form. Who is the dragon?
I was going to say, we're back Akatosh. To Akatosh.
We're back to Akatosh, right? Mirror of the lie, revealing purity and chaos with fervor, that false life might be abolished. With the fire of new light, may the Mundus be reforged. So there's a lot to open up here, and we're not going to get into that on this episode, but I just want, like, you'll probably notice some of the things in there kind of coincide with things that you would consider relate to Meridia or Merid Nunda, her original name, right?
Yes.
Now, how does this apply to Aethelia? Well, Aethelia is one of these 9 Coruscations. She is the last one on the list. Now, get this. All of these other 9 have their names on the list, but there's lots of gaps. It's like an old document with like holes
in
the text.
It's like too much smudged writing or whatever. It's right. Like, I can't really make out what this says.
Right. So you've got like Nemo Lee and Shiza Rana and Londo Vera and then even Zero Lig. Lig, interesting. Mm-hmm. But then you get to the very last one and the name is omitted. The name should be Aethelia, or is the proto name to what eventually became known as Aethelia. The White Star, our prime archon, queen of fates unwritten, showed her the infinite abyss. undeterminate C, mora obscura. Who does that sound like?
I was gonna say that's somewhat familiar.
That sounds like Hermaeus Mora, right? Like mora obscura revealed the indefinite limits of Lork Apeiron, Lorcon,
mm-hmm.
to the four corners of the Orbix Arenae. Myriad kingdoms along innumerable paths at last came to the south. The south is mentioned in this document a lot. And I believe that the south probably coincides with this version of Nirn that all of our characters are in.
That was what I gathered from it too, because I didn't really know what else to pull from it. If anybody has any ideas on that, I'm kind of interested, because that was literally that was literally all I could come up with too. I'm like, I'm guessing. Like,
I'm pretty sure if you read through the rest of the document,
literal interpretation. Yeah,
and some of the other references in here. I'm pretty sure that the South is Nirn in the current version.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
So here, let's go back through it. Our Prime Archon. Okay, she's basically the first of these nine. Queen of Fates Unwritten, right? Creator of Fates, Scryer of Fates, yep. Showed her the infinite abyss, indeterminate sea, revealed the indefinite limits of Kor Apeiron. So it's as if she realized the limitations of reality and the limitations of unknown knowledge. She was, at some point in the early forming of the world, she realized Hermaeus Mora's realm, the limitations of that, and the limitations of what Lorcan was able to do with the creation of reality. She felt confined by that. To the four corners of the Orbix Arenae, myriad kingdoms along innumerable paths at last came to the south. So she basically ventures out into all of these other realities, all the versions of the world that she can see, and then she comes to Nirn. And then it goes on and says this: not only Anuiel and Sithis, and there's gaps every time the text doesn't sound right, there's a gap there. So not only space.
It's like dot, dot, dot.
Right. Anuiel and Sithis, space, harmony within duality, unity of opposites, right? The two primordial beings kind of merging together, that contains starlight and endless possibility beyond cosmic interplay. He named her blank the colors of light. Just like, imagine like a prism, like the idea that like you take the light that comes from the combining of those two things, and then you run it through this white star. You take a white star, run it through a prism, you get a spectrum of colors, right?
Mm-hmm.
All these possibilities of existence. The madness of the time god, Akatosh, and the first challenge of his shadow, that feels like a very Sithis kind of thing, who in nothingness saw those endless possibilities first, space, outside and separate from the trinimic, yet crucial to all three. Linear time layered atop an infinite possibility. Thus did Akatosh, another gap, in the south, and yet another gap, learned why his insanity is all that is and could be, another gap, by this lesson, another gap, Adamantia, that sounds like one of the towers, right? Mm-hmm. Stable, spired, fixed by a stone of nothing possible. Another gap, cleaving a path through the everything to reach Numancia. Thus we must, another gap, against man, another gap, that our violence might bring forth a numinous paravant, who may yet with unbound hands echo forth the Prime Archon's endeavor. Okay, so Let me consolidate all of this.
I was going to say, that's a lot to unpack.
There's a lot here. Okay, so here's what I think this is saying. It's saying that she saw all the possibilities of what Anuiel and Sithis, some combination of Anuiel and Sithis together could do. But then she saw that this Nirn was confined by the limitations, the madness of the time god. Akatosh emerges and orders time in a very straight line. That's it. He says no to her concept of all of these potentials. And so he goes, this is the way the world should work. It needs to go in this direction. She also sees the limitations of Lorcan's plan, the existence of mortal men being brought into the world, this kind of thing. And so she's going, this is madness. There's so much possibility. There's all this entire spectrum of a rainbow of possibility for time to play out. And yet the limitations of the time god have defined that the world can only work in one way, in one direction. And she felt limited by that. And so she tried to rebel against that limitation. That's what I'm gathering here. And then we get the details about how the Time God comes to the south, establishes Adamantia, the towers, which help maintain the stability of existence and time and the way the time flows in Nern, cleaves a path through everything. Then at this bottom part, and I think this piece specifically is from the Star Queen Virelius, who is writing this with an agenda. That we must, against men, that our violence might bring forth a numinous paravant, who may with unbound hands echo forth the prime archon's endeavor. So, numinous is a hero, and paravant is, here, let me open this up on the screen, has to do with, and this is what it clicks to, and there's a link here in the UESP, it clicks to Alessia. So, the idea here is that they needed a hero who would bring forth the endeavors of mankind into the scenario. So somebody like Saint Alessia, in order to change the fate in the direction that Nern was headed. I think that's what this all means. That's my take on it. What do you think, Lewis?
I was going to say, I don't think you're wrong. Like, so let me put it this way. I think there's credence to this because I think this character's a little deeper than than a lot of people wanted to give it credit for at the start. And that's good because just a shallow, like, hey, here's a Daedric Prince. And the initial look is that it's like, oh yeah, okay. It's not the antithesis of Hermaeus Mora, but it's a different styling of, instead of being able to modify everything, but not really knowing all the things.
Right.
It's
right.
Well, okay. Like it's, you're basically inverted of each other. It's like, well, no, she has her own agenda, and it seems like it's freeing. I guess it's kind of like freeing fate to do what it wants.
Yeah. Well, okay. Think of it like this: the Aedra committed parts of themselves into the building of reality, like the creation of the world and all of that, right? Mm-hmm. And that was architected and then left by Magnus. And it was organized by Akatosh. If it wasn't for Akatosh saying, okay, time's going to move in this direction and creating limitations around that, then the world would not have been created the way it was created.
Right.
And then you have the Daedra who were like, nah, we're good. We're not going to get involved with this. But then creation ended up existing anyway. And they were like, well, I guess we can play with this. But
right, we're here anyway.
We're here anyway. Well. We didn't leave, so we're just going to do our thing because that's what we do. And they were kind of left over. And so they were kind of, some of them are a little bit more anti-creation than others. Some of them were designed to be anti-creation. We'll get into that in a future episode because this has to do with Mehrunes Dagon, which is interesting.
Yes, I was going to say, speaking of weird scenarios where it's like, well, destruction, but also to lead to creation, so both.
Yeah,
like,
there's some stuff in here that shows that Mehrunes Dagon may have been created by the Magna Gi with specific intent to undo the creation in a way. So you have so you have the conflict between like the Aedra and the Daedra in this like, well, we made creation and we didn't, and we're chaotic and we're order. But then you have the Magna Gi, or specifically Athelia, who's not really chaos so much as she is potential. She sees that like this one path that Akatosh defined as the flow of time, the one way that time works, is very limiting because she could see all of these potential paths. And in her mind, she's going, why doesn't reality engage all of these things simultaneously? Or why don't we jump between them? Why do we create these walls around our limitations of the way the world works? And it appears to me that that's why she's dangerous, is because if she tears down the walls of creation, if she rebels against Akatosh and breaks time, this is what happens when dragon breaks happen, then all of a sudden there's no longer a specific order of time. Everything gets loosened. All paths are now possible. And the world doesn't work the way it used to anymore, which may create a complication for somebody like Hermaeus Mora in that there's just too much information.
Right. Now it's like an information overload. It's like
it's infinite.
Exactly. As is, it's, you know,
it is infinite It's like double infinite. It's like infinity times so infinity, ridiculous. Right?
Like, it is. Like double infinity.
Right, right. Like, yeah. Like Hermaeus Mora's realm is like this realm of like infinite knowledge, but then it now takes that and then expands that even more, even wider. And there's no longer limitations about how this stuff works or interplays.
Right.
So it really is kind of a fulfillment of chaos, so which goes back to the Daedra. It kind of loops back around. It's crazy. Like it is.
When you, again, that brings that double side to the story. It's not just a Hermaeus Mora situation. It's like, well, okay. Cause again, it would be kind of, I don't know how to put it, but it would be a little disappointing if it was a Daedric Prince was created to the story just as an antagonist to another Daedric Prince, because none of them are designed like that.
Right, right.
And I feel that was the initial concept a lot of people had. I was like, oh, it's just like Hermaeus Mora needed a rival.
Right,
and it's
right.
Like, not so much, actually. It's more like they just, because another strong note about all Daedric Princes, they tend to just spend a lot of time screwing with each other.
they do. Yeah,
it's pretty common,
right? And it feels almost like a mistake for people who play ESO or who are into the lore to be like, oh, it's just a simple thing. She was one of the Daedric princes, but they didn't like her, so they locked her up and la la. And right. I don't know why we assume that, just because like it's a new addition to the lore, or it's ESO, it's not one of the mainline games, and people kind of poo-poo on it or whatever.
Yep.
Like, I was very, very excited when I found that there's actually a lot more to this, and it ties into a concept that is still foggy and murky with all of these. I mean, you have 9 Coruscations, these 9 Magna Gii who are like Magnus, who are related to specific colored stars, who are powerful beings who may or may not still be actually active in the world. Like, all of this is what Elder Scrolls lore feels like. This feeling of like, I'm looking through a pinhole at an entire room of stuff, but I can't really make everything out. But I can make out this much, and I go, oh, that little bit about Athelia is really interesting. It just gets simplified into a version that you can like pitch in a marketing thing, right? And well, so everyone's like, well, that's all there is.
Explain this in the, you know, the teaser trailer for the year. People are gonna be like, what the hell are they talking about?
Right,
like,
right.
And unless you're super nerdy and listen to a show like this.
Right, but like, look at any other Elder Scrolls thing that's come out. Like, if you just on the surface look at the marketing material for Skyrim, you're like,
oh, yeah.
Oh, cool dragon guy has magic and can, I guess, control dragons. Cool. You know, like, okay.
Guy lives in mountains and yells at lizards. Yeah, that's a great pitch.
that's a great pitch. But there's clearly more to the story of Skyrim, like the dragon blood, why the dragons came back, where they went, how they were, how important they were in the Mirithic era.
Defeating Alduin, which looks like, oh, look, you're the hero, actually screw with the timeline that we didn't realize, and it's caused like exponential problems as a result. Like, there's so much more to it than the surface value of like, yep, go beat up some dragons. Dragons are cool. Look, you can yell at people. It's like, oh, all right. Yeah, that's neat.
Yeah. And it may not be as weird and wacky as Morrowind, which is in some ways a marketing nightmare.
That weird and wacky.
Right. But like, I mean, think back to when that came out. I don't remember seeing TV ads for it. I just remember seeing a box in the video game store and thinking, wow, that looks really cool.
Piece of parchment.
Yeah, I was like, that looks really cool, but I don't know anything about it. And I think that was part of the dilemma. It's part of why when the expansions came out, especially the Blood Moon one, where it was like, oh, werewolves, I know what those are. All of a sudden, I became more interested in it because it looked like something I could understand.
Yes, you lure people in with something palatable and then get weird.
Right. Yeah. You got to say, okay, well, here's, and this is how storytelling works in a lot of things, is you have the palatable, easy to ingest version, the kind of thing that any 10-year-old would see and be like, okay, I understand. I think I get a gist of the story. But then you have the deeper stuff that connects to more and more, I don't know, complexity and weirdness. And, not being sure about what actually is going on here, just kind of hints and possibilities. Right. And that's how Elder Scrolls lore works, which makes this
sure
really
is.
Cool. So, all right. So we're going to take a quick break. We're going to thank our patrons, but let that digest for a moment. And then Lotus and I'll come wrap it up, and then we'll discuss a little bit more. So don't go anywhere.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store. Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
This is Hamish Morak, Dragonborn, and you are educating yourself to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast.
All right, so before we get into thanking our patrons, I got some updates. First of all, I've been talking about the gifted subscriptions thing. You can go gift subscriptions or ask for a gift, and somebody else can go to the Patreon, patreon.com/Elder Scrolls Lorecast, and gift you a subscription, whatever tier, however many months you want, all of that stuff. That is all, that's all been set up, and it's been like that for a few weeks now. So if you want something for the holidays or want to give something for the holidays, go check it out. Secondly, if you are following as a free account, then there is an option where you might randomly get a promotion where you get some sort of discount. So if you want to sign up as a free account with the hopes that maybe someday you get a free promotion, that will happen as well, or could happen as well. Also, I've now updated the Patreon so that if you are subscribing, you are getting the ad-free episodes. There is a feed that will be up on Patreon for all of our subscribers, which means that if you're a subscriber, you don't have to listen on the page on the Patreon app on Spotify. Did I say Patreon on Spotify?
Yeah,
so you don't have Spotify. You don't have to listen on the Patreon app. You could listen on Spotify. You just have to go to the other feed and make sure that your Spotify and your Patreon accounts are connected so that you can listen on that feed without any ads, which is a lot more convenient for people. So lots of fun stuff. I've been updating, trying to make this as awesome as possible for people. So go check that stuff out. Also, have to welcome Rose M, Ariana E, Andrew A, and Ikram to the Patreon. Thank you for joining us. Welcome. So glad that you decided to join us. And then our Daedric Princes, Blinding Vision, Hersine, Kirasi, and Peter R. Thank you for your support as well. And to all 133 of our current subscribers. That doesn't include the free ones. Those are just the ones who decided to contribute. Thank you so much for your support. We really do appreciate it. Also, there's a new review that popped up. Check this out. This is from Shiroi Ninja. I'm sure I butchered that. From the United States, who writes, "Why does the Night Mother sound like the Night Daddy?" What? Awesome show. Really contribute to my Elder Scrolls addiction. They're really informative, and I don't know how they fit all this lore in their heads. Lotus and Tom are awesome dudes, and their voices aren't as annoying sounding as a Nernroot.
So just because I know how much I dislike listening to myself on podcasts, I appreciate that.
Yeah. So thank you for taking the time to leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. If you do so, I'll read out your review maybe next week. Who knows? Whenever it shows up on my list. Also, you can help us out by rating the show on Spotify. 5 stars is a huge help. It really does increase our rank. It makes us more visible for people to find us and all of that stuff. And if you'd like to share with your friends or whatever, you can do that as well. All of that is extremely helpful. Thank you for being here and for hanging out. All right, let's move on with the rest of the show.
You're listening to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, dear child of Sithis. That is why the Night Mother loves you.
All right, so we're back. We got to wrap up this episode about Athelia. One of the names that these Magnagi go by are Star Orphans. So if you hear that in the future, that's what's being referred to here. And the rest of the story is basically she gets imprisoned and then she gets out of prison, and then you play through the quest line in ESO and you learn more about it. And without spoiling too much, there are some cool moments. There are imagine a moment where you actually get to hang out with a Daedric Prince, but that Daedric Prince has been depowered and is confused and is sitting in a bar. It's very cool. There's something very, very cool about that.
Yeah, something else that I guess the mixed bag, that is something I wanted to bring up since we're kind of getting into this portion of the show where it's like, all right, well, they're all unique, and they all have their own realms. We haven't even talked about Athelia's realm yet. We should touch on that, which is called Miramore. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, from the concept of the like idea that she's got the ties to being like a Magna Gi more than anything else, I've found Meridia tends to have a more humanoid form as well. Yes. for what it's worth.
Right.
It's a very similar situation with Athelia. She just kind like some of the Daedric Prince look weird. Some of them kind of just look like slightly off humans. Mm-hmm. Or elves. And she definitely falls into the slightly off humanoid form.
Right. Even her proportions are a little bit weird because they're bigger. She's taller.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So like where Shir Gorath is basically the size of like a person, usually, because they can all, you know, change as need be. But she's rather large, like form wise, like pretty tall. It's almost like, wouldn't say like a giant, but like proportionally to your point, like,
yeah,
seems taller. Yeah. Than you would expect. But then very humanoid, but also has a lot of these crystalline aspects, as well as like some people have like call them like glowing things, stuff like it. To me, I've always thought they're supposed to be reflections, like it's actually like built into her skin,
like a prism that breaks white light into multiple colors.
Correct. And hence the tie into like the idea of her realm being Miramore. Mm-hmm. Crystals are her aesthetic gimmick, I guess is the best way I can put it, because they all kind of have their own thing. Like Hermaeus Mora has his whole like, oh yeah, it's Lovecraftian galore.
Yeah.
She is made essentially of like crystalline everything. Her minions are crystalline. Like that's her aesthetic, a lot of crystals. And to your point, and why I kind of felt it was worth bringing this up, it's this prism aspect.
Yeah.
That's the design. It's splitting these colors into not colored rooms type of thing that we often would see from something like Meridia.
Right.
But it's like the crystalline effect going on.
And also
here,
crystals not only split light into their component parts, and they show us like the different colors that come from light, but they're also reflective, kind of like mirrors.
Correct.
Mirror more,
yes.
Right?
Yeah,
and
exactly.
A mirror, when you look at a mirror, is a swapped version of reality. It's you're looking at reality on the side, but it's a little bit different in one way, which is what she sees when she looks into all these potential paths. She's seeing similarities between all of these paths, but yet they're all slightly different. So you do kind of have this multiverse thing going on along with this linear Kelpa kind of thing.
Without it, it gets so the thing, one of the reasons that I think it was interesting that you brought up Alkosh is the deal of when this is like this, it gets real dragon breaky. With timelines, which I really can't feel should be understated. Like that's actually like a pretty major thing where maybe this whole splitting of realms and times and stuff like that, which was her goal, to, you know, accomplish whatever it was she actually did want to accomplish, doesn't really specifically matter, but it's just the idea that there's all these timelines ties so much into the idea of dragon breaks, where something happens, it's usually like a catastrophic event that breaks the timeline into all these various threads. And if you look at it, very similar idea. It's like fracturing the timeline like you would fracture light to a crystal. I just think it's a really cool tie-in to her, mm-hmm. and how kind of dragon breaks exist in them of themselves in the series already.
Yeah, we've established that time can be broken and it splinters and multiple things can happen at the same time, and then it all gets forced back together when Akatosh gains control of the time stream again.
Right.
So we've established that time is fragile in that way, and she reinforces that idea, which I think is really cool. Like it plays into her as a character. It also plays into this idea that not only is she extremely powerful because she's able to splinter time or break the time stream if she wants, but she's also very vulnerable at the same time. And I won't give away too much from the storyline, but we find out that she is more vulnerable than you would have assumed for somebody who is as powerful as she is.
Right.
There is an event that happens. So, yeah.
And the other thing is, too, it's one of these situations, just because these beings can't really die and they're all, you know, they're much more powerful than like a lot of the characters you'll deal with in game or fight or whatever. They're not these unstoppable beings. You usually end up, as the hero of said story, end up beating one at the end. Like, that's
right. Right.
And usually get dumped on quite a few times.
Right. Usually it's through all sorts of means of like gathering together power or friends or whoever, like ways of kind of banding together. Right.
Exactly. Like, so yeah. They're not unstoppable. They're just very strong. And since you can't really kill Daedra, they just kind of turn back into their Azure Plasm and then through a horrific process get reformed type of deal.
Yeah.
You're never really killing them. They're just coming back later, but that doesn't mean you kind of can't take them out of position or out of, you know, whatever they're going for, which is, again, what happens most of the time. That's the plot of most of the games.
And I won't ruin it for you, Lotus, but the way this ends is interesting. Like, the solution is, I mean, on one hand, I was kind of like, shouldn't Hermaeus Mora have thought of that? But then on the other hand, I was like, man, it's still pretty cool. It's kind of neat that that's a possibility, but I won't ruin it for you.
On that point, sometimes you do need to create or take a few creative liberties with writing when you have creatures that are like all powerful. It's kind of
right.
Although it's like, oh yeah, he can see all possibilities. It's like, and I mean, the story does go into the fact that there's ways that they're trying to obscure it. That's the point. And like why several people are working against Hermaeus Mora is what does it.
And I would imagine that Hermaeus Mora has knowledge about our reality, but maybe not the other potential realities that don't.
He doesn't have all knowledge,
right?
Because that's just it. Like, that's actually, if we want to talk back about Skyrim, I mean, there was a piece of knowledge he wanted, so it was like, well, I'm getting it. Like So
he collects it, but he doesn't already have it all.
He Facebooked that dude in the village.
right.
It's like,
okay.
So like, that's just it. It's like, it's not that he has everything all the time, but he will collect everything.
Right. If given the option. So, okay. Yes. So, Miramor, the reflection of the Daedra, who is the same as the Realm of Oblivion, and you've got all these like mirrors and skeletons and shattered mirrors, all sorts of fun things all over the place. It's really a cool looking place. So there you go. I'm not sure. I think that kind of wraps it up, unless there's
I think that
I would end up spoiling things if I keep going.
But, yeah, I mean, we even touched on, I wouldn't really say this all that much. So this is the only thing I'll say is a little, we've gone over this kind of jokingly so many times. They all kind of have their minions. And one of the jokes is like a lot of Daedra feel like they're just like on rent. Like, oh, well, I've got these Flame Atronach.
I've got Flame Atronach too. Well, so do I.
Right. Yeah. And then it's like some are more prone to working with certain, you know, Daedric princes, but they're not necessarily exclusive. Her thing is just, hers are all like, okay, they're all like mirror versions. Like, that's just, it's an Atronach. Well, okay, this one's mirror Atronach. It's
although
like, okay,
there are a few that are like weird shaped.
So that was what I was going to say. So that it is worth noting, some of them are kind of peculiar looking. Mm-hmm. They all have the mirror gimmick and the crystal gimmick type of thing.
But some of them are
mirror, it's a little more even crystal than mirror is what I should say.
Yeah, some of them are more alien looking. Like they aren't just reskinned versions of other things.
So some of them sort of almost don't even have forms, which is kind of interesting. They're just like a bunch of geometric shapes that contort and like attack you.
Yeah, they're like
more so than an actual creature, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, they're a little bit weird. And then there's those little fly guys. Those things are all over the place.
Oh yes,
there's a little, I don't remember what they're called. They're a little let me find it again. What were they called? They were it's not on the list of things. Why is this not on the list? Okay, so we've got the Mirror Plasm, which is the goo looking one. Stry the Fate Eater, which is like a crawly crab looking sort of thing.
Yep.
Dark Shards, which are like the alien ones with like the big long limbs. There's even a glass dragon, a titan. But I don't see the list. I don't see the little, it's just like a bug.
The one that, yeah, I was
it's
gonna,
just like
it,
a dragonfly.
It looks like a dragonfly. It's right. Like a crystalline dragonfly, but I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah, I don't know where it is. It's kind of weird that it's not on this list.
Yeah, UASP. Somebody needs to update the UASP.
I was
going to
say, we got to go update that.
So there you go. Lots of cool stuff. And I think maybe if you take the time to appreciate the story a little bit and just kind of get past the idea of like, well, it's a prequel and I kind of predicted how things were going to play out.
You know she's not in the later games. So, yeah.
Well, here's one thing I want to end on though, Lotus. I have a question for you. The character art, you were talking about the character art and she looks bigger. Even her facial features and her animation is different. It feels like it was designed from a different game and then imported into ESO. Does that make sense?
It feels like that to me. Like you can't take a World of Warcraft character and put it in ESO and be like, yeah, look, this is my character.
If it's not even
the same art style.
Right. She distinctly looks different. The way her face animates, her eyes on her face, the proportions of her body. And again, a lot of the stuff on her face. Here's a question for you. Every time, and we know this, we've talked with the devs, every time they make a big update to ESO, they have to get approval from like mainline Elder Scrolls teams, Todd Howard, all of those people.
That's why they've got the lore masters. They've got to actually fact check their stuff before it gets approved through.
Right. Yeah. So this would have been a major addition to the lore of Elder Scrolls. What if this character was already being designed for the next mainline Elder Scrolls game, and they took that design and worked it into ESO? That's why it looks so distinctly different. It wasn't because they got a new artist. It wasn't because they went on a slightly different direction with the design in ESO. What if it needs to match what we will eventually see in the next few years in the next Elder Scrolls game?
It's like what some if she new comes iteration back? That comes back again?
Right.
Thing.
Right. Well, just like the Grey March. The Grey March happens at the end of every age, right? There are certain things, there are certain ways that the Daedra work. And as like you mentioned before, you can't ever get rid of all Daedra. And there are complexities in the story that make it very possible for this Athelia or maybe a different one, because we now know that there are multiple realities to enter into this reality. What if that ties in to the conflict between the elves and men, between like those who worship Akatosh and they want time to work a certain way and those who don't, you know, like
that's an interesting idea. I think that would make a lot of people very confused because they'd be like, what? I already wrote this one off.
but I mean, nobody saw dragons.
We didn't really see
dragons in the stories until Skyrim, right? Like we didn't get any of that
stuff. It was very minimal when you ever saw dragons. And to be fair, it's not the first time that like we already kind of made reference to it. It's not the first time a Daedric Prince has not been known about. I mean,
yes,
we didn't know what the Grey March was until we had an expansion pack to the Elder Scrolls 4. It wasn't even the main game.
We didn't know what dragon priests were until we got Skyrim, right? Like, and there's a bunch of stuff that pops up in Oblivion as well. We didn't know what an Oblivion realm really looked like until we got to go to one, right? Like there are things that every time they make a new mainline Elder Scrolls game, they are expanding the lores in unpredictable ways or unpredictable ways. And this is something I'm concerned about is that we've gone so long and we have kind of this different mentality among the fan base at this point where they feel like they have ownership over the lore so that no matter what they do, some contingency of fans are going to be like, well, that breaks the lore. I don't like that. So here are your options right now. I'm talking directly to you, listener. Your options right now are firmly plant your feet in the sand and just stay there and be absolutely miserable with anything they possibly do in the future because you're unwilling to see new things added to this world, or be open to some possibilities because otherwise you might just be cutting yourself off from enjoying what could potentially be a really good game.
So are you saying not allow them to do anything new, but also be upset that they didn't do anything new?
Right. Like it doesn't make any sense. You got to be open to it. And yeah, it may not be the thing you predicted or the thing you specifically wanted, but give them the option to try something, like give them the benefit of the doubt.
Like it. Like that's yeah,
and it's fine.
Thing. You can just be like, that wasn't my thing.
After you try it, if you're just like, I just didn't really like it as much, that's fine. But at least give them a chance. Like, don't write them off before they do it, you know? Like, and just like with Athelia, there's more underneath this than what seems like on the surface when you just look at the marketing stuff. So give it a chance.
That's why I do hope that it's fleshed out a little more later down the line. Because again, the potential of these beings in the series makes things really interesting, especially when they get into like weird feuds with each other and you just kind of get in the way and it's like, oh yeah, I'm supposed to be the hero. It's like, yeah, you don't really matter here. Like you're just kind of bumbling around while other things like are happening around you. Interesting thing. And it was actually, I was actually sort of bummed because at the time I was shocked how well it was kept under wraps. Like, people nowadays love to just post spoilers and ruin stuff for people. I don't really get why. I usually, unless the entire basis of something is based on a twist, I don't care necessarily too much about spoilers, but like when something's based on a twist, it's like, all right, well, don't be a jerk about it. But
right,
people love doing that stuff.
Yeah,
I did not see any, honestly, the people who spoiled the Necrom chapter to ESO for most people I know was the reveal of Gold Road. Most right. people seem to be like, wait, what? There's another Daedric Prince? And I was like, ah, guys, you spoiled your own thing.
You didn't finish the, you would have known that already. Yeah.
Well, right. And it's like, I get it. Like, everybody plays stuff at their own pace. We just were joking that we're both about to finish as opposed to a finish. It's, I've kind of enjoyed slowly playing through the chapters over the last couple of years.
Yeah. And there's a lot of other stuff to do in that zone. Like, heck.
Absolutely.
The world events, I forget what they're called.
Oh, like the Miramore incursions.
Yeah. Those things take forever.
They're really fun.
They are really long and involved.
Yes,
and
you want a lot of people for those. Those are absolutely obnoxious. I've never actually had so few people in a zone that I've been able to try to solo one, but
oh god, it would take forever to solo.
Monumentally, yeah.
You could do
obnoxious.
It would just take a really long time. But yes. the point here is that there are lots of other, like, there's lots of side quests, there's lots of other stuff, right? Like,
yeah.
And then you get involved with all the other things when there's housing or doing trials or whatever other things that you're doing in the moment. So
exactly.
I'm gonna go wrap up the story. I'm like right there. I'm like,
I know. I want to get it finished up because I need to have I need to do our spoiler cast for the year like we usually do. But yeah. I just thought it was funny that it was kept so well under wraps that it was like the reveal of the next chapter essentially was the spoiler. Because my thing about Necrom, we had kind of just mentioned in closing, like, I like the stories in ESO and I feel like they add a lot, but there's really like some of the twists, they're not always based on twists, but like when there are twists, a lot of times I'm like, well, yeah, obviously that's not really a twist. Like, it's a little predictable, although the story is enjoyable. That was one of the few times in ESO that I was like, well, I definitely did not see Daedric Prince coming out of left field as the thing Hermaeus Mora is trying to hide from everybody.
So
I enjoyed that. And then when it was kind of just unveiled, I was like, oh, all right then. Well, so much your best kept secret.
All right, that was the thing that we figured out at the end of the other. Okay, cool.
Right.
Yeah. Well, there you go. That's Athelia for you. If you have any thoughts on this one, we'd love to hear your thoughts. Comment, jump on the Discord, let us know. Comment on the Patreon if you're a patron. Comment on the Patreon. We'd love to read those as well. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in. We'll be back next week, and I think we'll probably cover some of these other Magna Gee, the Star Orphans.
Yeah, maybe we should do the Star Orphans. We kind of like have been jumping around a little bit to just like some user requested stuff, and I've been enjoying some of these. So
yeah. So we'll tackle that next time. We've also have our random page, but before that, Lotus, anything you want to share before we go?
So our big thing is we don't know if we're going to be able to actually do an episode of Tales, but kicking off, I guess it would be tomorrow, insanely early or very late. Either way, this weekend, from when this episode launches, it kicks off on the 6th at 2 a.m.
this is going to be
so, I guess, technically intense. That's the 7th, but like, and that's Eastern time. Our Extra Life Marathon is kicking off from Tales of Tamriel here as well, because I'm a part of this show as well, and USP is supporting it. We always get help from Bethesda as well to help promote stuff, but this weekend, all weekend long, kicking off at 2 a.m. This Saturday morning. So that'd be the 7th. We are having a weekend-long charity marathon for Extra Life, which supports the Children's Miracle Network Hospitals. This will be my 11th year doing it, and I just want to shout out thank you to Crown Esso, who's actually part of the Elder Heroes team. He's starting the event, and then it's going to be Ark and Promethean going, and then I'm actually closing out the event this year, which is different than usual, as I usually am kind of the one to kick things off. But with my little addition, time is a bit more restricted for
changing,
me.
I get it.
So, you know, I just want to shout out the fact that everybody is helping this awesome cause, and it's kind of, it was my baby originally, like 11 years ago, and it has become such a community thing that it's just, I'm so happy that everybody helps in any way they can. So hang out with us.
What's the Twitch channel to go to?
So it's going to be all of ours. So we're basically handing it off raid via raid. So it's going to be Crown Esso to start. Then it's going to be Arcaneer. Then it'll be Promethean, who I believe is Prom 99. And then me, Lotus of Doom. You check out any of these channels, we're going to be live on them throughout the weekend.
Lotus, if you can post links on the Discord.
I will. People will find links on the Discord.
If you're just looking for links, go to the Discord. You'll see the Elder Scrolls Lorecast channel.
Super easy.
Easy to find it, yeah.
The easiest one is go to Extra Life. Our Extra Life participant, we've got it nice and simple. UESP.
There you go.
Easy enough to get to. But yeah, come hang out with us. It's, you know, obviously if you can donate, that's amazing. But it's not all, you know, helping spread the word. Yeah,
just come make Lotus do ridiculous things.
Yeah, we're going to be playing Daggerfall. I've got dedicated time. I'm going to play the Elder Scrolls 2 Daggerfall.
Donate money and say, hey, you say like, hey, Lotus, if I donate $5, will you do this wacky thing? And he'll be like,
yeah,
okay. And then you can see it happen.
People were reminding me recently of the fact that a couple years ago we got a donation from Avron, a friend of the show on the stream team. She donated to ruin my armor and make me join the Almeria Dominion.
Yes,
I spent a month looking like a Cyrodiilic traffic cone for the wrong alliance.
That's great. Donate some money and make Lotus do weird stuff. It'll be a blast.
It's always a fun time, and we'll be giving away all sorts of Patreon tier rewards from the UESP, so check their Patreon out and come win something. So
there you go. Awesome stuff. Yeah, go check that out. That's coming up this weekend, and I've got my stuff. You guys know where my stuff is, robotsradio.net, for all my links and all, you know, my shows and a bunch of other shows on the network, all of that stuff. And we have our random page. Are you ready?
We sure do.
You ready? This comes from Elder Scrolls Online. This is a character named Rolstag. Do you remember Rolstag? Rolstag is a Nord who can be found with his drunken brethren around Western Skyrim. When you approach him, he will challenge you to a fight that you can accept.
I have no idea who this guy is.
When he sees you, he will shout out a challenge. You looking for a fight too? Come on then. I'm talking to you, milk drinker. Fight me. Are you too chicken to challenge Rolstag? Come on, Pitbait, I challenge you. He just keeps yelling stuff at you. If you try to leave or just stand there, he will begin to goad you to a fight. What are you staring at? Come and fight me, Rolstag. Rolstag. He even like slurs his own name with the SH.
Amazing.
We'll end you, Snowback. He just yells things at you. He's a Nord. He's male. He has 57,497 health. His reaction is neutral. So I guess he isn't by default a friend or foe. And guess, you want to guess what his class is? He's a shirtless Nord who's standing without, and shoeless. A shirtless, shortless, shortless. He has shorts on. He has no shirt. He has no shoes. He has basically a mead thing, like a cup in his hand.
Tankard.
And he has a weapon on his back, but I won't tell you the weapon. Guess what class he is?
Drunk?
Nope. No, it's an actual, like, class.
Oh, like, he's an actual class? Because I was going to say, honestly, about character creation, I want shirtless Nord to be one of my things.
Right. Well, it ties to the weapon. Like, it's the class makes sense for the weapon he has on his
back. Okay, because I was going to say, is it super off kilter? Is he a Nightblade?
He's not a Nightblade.
That'd be even funnier.
Right, that would be funny. He's a Frost Mage. He has a staff with a dragon head on his back.
Cool, that's fine. I'll allow it.
Yeah, pretty weird. There's Rolstag, the Frost Mage.
I don't remember that character.
Yeah, he's a good one. So there you go. Yeah, that's Elder Scrolls Online too. That's not even Skyrim, which makes that even funnier, because you would expect more of that stuff in Skyrim, but there are things like that happen in Elder Scrolls Online, so pretty cool. So there you go. Thanks everybody for tuning in. We really appreciate you being here, and Lotus and I have a blast, especially when you join the chat and type things
thanks
in chat. Thank
us.
You so much for hanging out, and we will see you next time. Until then, well, I don't know, try to not break reality. Because Hermes Mori might just lock you up and then, you know,
delete you from existence.
Deal with that somehow. Go for it. All right. Bye, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Check out robotsradio.net for more podcasts just like this, and join us on the Robots Radio Discord. Be part of a community of over 5,000 people who are excited about video games and so much more. Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. People always say it's good to unwind, but that's easier said than done. The exception, Chumba Casino. They actually make it easier done than said, or at least the same. Chumba Casino is an online social casino with hundreds of casino-style games like slots and blackjack. Play for fun. Play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Sign up now and collect your free welcome bonus at chumbacasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply.